Welcome to another deep dive from us here at Next Chapter News. You know, diving deep into some really compelling cases. And today we're going to be kind of in North Carolina, and we're looking at a case that has left folks scratching their heads for decades, literally.
Yeah, we're talking over two decades.
Yeah, and you know, we cover a lot of true crime here at Next Chapter News and nextchapternews.com. You can find us online, of course. But this one is particularly interesting because It touches on something. It's a small community, very rural.
Right.
And it just kind of underscores how even in places where you think things are quiet and safe, really bad things can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this idea of a peaceful, small town, a rural community shattered by a really violent crime. And that's what we're looking at today. The case of Judy Carol Rawlings, a 16-year-old who went missing October 5th, 2001.
Right.
And was tragically found dead 2 weeks later on October 19th.
And that's really what we're going to be diving into today. We're looking at the details of her disappearance, the investigation, and kind of the ongoing mystery, because this case, as we said, it's still unsolved.
Right.
So I guess let's start with Judy herself. Mm. You know, who was she? What do we know about her?
Yeah. So Judy Carol Rawlings, 16 years old, a daughter of Tammy and Joe Schmidt. And from what we can gather from reports, she was, you know, like a lot of teenagers, she was described as spirited. You know, she was a typical teenager. But there were some things that were going on in her life at the time that might be significant. She wasn't attending school at the time of her disappearance, and she had stopped taking medication for ADD.
And that kind of, right from the get-go, presents a bit of a, you know, what was going on there. Was that a conscious decision?
Exactly. We don't have a lot of details from the report, so it's speculation, but it's something to consider, right? Like, how could that have potentially influenced her behavior, her decision-making leading up to her disappearance? It's one of those subtle factors that investigators would definitely looked into.
Yeah. And I think, too, you know, we remember that with teenagers especially, their lives can be very complex, and there might be things going on that, you know, even their parents aren't fully aware of.
Absolutely.
So the last confirmed sighting of Judy was actually by her mother, Tammy. And that was on the morning of October 3rd, 2001, around 7:30 a.m. And this was just before Tammy left for a doctor's appointment.
And it's interesting because you have this gap, right? She's last seen on the 3rd, and then she's not reported missing until the 5th. What happened in those 2 days? That's a huge question mark.
It is. And that's something that, you know, again, investigators would have to really try to piece together. Now, Tammy, her mother, was adamant that Judy would not have run away. She specifically said that Judy was afraid of the dark, which doesn't really, you know, mesh with the idea of her just taking off on her own.
It really doesn't. And especially if she's afraid of the dark, you wouldn't expect her to, you know, be out wandering around at night, would you?
No, absolutely not.
It challenges this whole idea of a typical teenage runaway situation. And, you know, it's important to remember that Tammy's perspective, her intuition as a mother, is crucial here. She knew her daughter better than anyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And her actions really speak to that. She distributed thousands of missing person flyers with the help of, you know, the community, her church, her neighbors. She was convinced that something had happened to Judy, that this was not just a simple case of a teenager running away.
And this is where things get a little bit complicated, because the sheriff's office initially classified Judy as a runaway.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine the frustration and anger that that must have caused for Tammy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, here you have a mother who's saying, my daughter wouldn't run away. She's afraid of the dark. And the police are saying, well, we think she's a runaway. It creates a huge disconnect, right? And potentially could have even hindered the investigation in those early crucial hours and days.
It's definitely a point of contention that, you know, kind of emerges right at the beginning of this case.
Yeah. And then you have this neighbor, Tony Ray Sierra Jr. He was 18 years old at the time. And he comes forward and says that he gave Judy a ride on his four-wheeler on the night of October 4th.
Okay, so the night before she was officially reported missing.
Right. He said that he dropped her off at Farlow Oil Company, which was a local store, around 11:30 p.m. Now, he claims that he didn't know who she was meeting or if anyone was waiting for her there, but it places her, at least according to him, away from home late at night.
And this is the last known sighting of her, essentially, before she disappears.
It is. And, you know, his account, it kind of raises more questions than answers, doesn't it? Was he being completely truthful?
Yeah.
Could he have been involved in some way? Or was he just an unwitting participant in, you know, whatever happened to her?
It definitely adds another layer of complexity to an already complex situation.
Yeah.
And then for 2 weeks, there's just silence. No sign of Judy.
Right. And then comes that devastating discovery on October 19th.
A raccoon hunter, Wyatt Farlow, he stumbles upon Judy's body in a field off Groom Road.
Yeah.
And this is less than a mile from her home. So she was very close to home the whole time.
Yeah, which is another really chilling detail, right? Like, she was so close, yet no one knew. And the scene itself was pretty disturbing.
Yeah, what did they find?
Well, she was partially clothed, nude from the waist down. Her body was badly decomposed, which, you know, after 2 weeks out in the elements, that's to be expected.
Sure.
But she was face down, and there was this nylon strap is twisted around her right wrist, and her purse was found nearby. So you have this image of, you know, potential struggle, potential restraint. It's a very disturbing detail, that strap.
And the fact that her purse was there
does
suggest that maybe robbery wasn't the motive.
Right, because if it was a robbery, why leave the purse?
Right.
It suggests that maybe it was something more personal. Now, she was wearing, according to the reports, a long sleeve t-shirt over a rugby shirt, a bra, toe socks, and she had a ring and a watch on her left hand. Again, this is more evidence potentially against robbery, right? Because those items were left.
It seems like from what you're describing, whoever did this, it wasn't about taking her belongings.
It could point to something more sinister, something more targeted.
Right.
Now, the autopsy, because the body was so decomposed, the official cause of death was listed as undetermined.
Okay.
But the doctor who performed the autopsy, Dr. Deborah Radish, she stated that the circumstances were extremely suspicious for an intentional fatal injury. So, in other words, they strongly suspected foul play.
Even though they couldn't say definitively what had killed her,
right,
it was clear that this was no accident.
Exactly.
So with that in mind, the sheriff's office, they shift gears, right? Now they're looking at this as a homicide.
Right. And their focus pretty quickly zeroes in on Tony Ray Sierra Jr., the neighbor who had given Judy that ride on his four-wheeler.
Right. That last known person to see her.
Exactly. 5 days after Judy's body was found, they searched Sierra's home.
Okay.
And they seized two four-wheelers, a handwritten note from Judy, some marijuana, and some other items. So they're clearly looking for any connection between him and Judy, any evidence that might link him to the crime.
Standard procedure. You know, when you have a person of interest, you want to see what you can find.
Right.
And then on November 15th, they take blood, hair, and saliva samples from Sierra for DNA comparison.
Again, standard procedure in a homicide investigation. You want to see if there's any forensic evidence that ties him to the crime scene. But here's the crucial point. Despite all of this, the questioning, the search, the DNA collection, no charges were ever filed against Tony Ray Sierra Jr.
So whatever they found, it wasn't enough to convince them that he was responsible.
Exactly. And this is where the frustration really starts to build, particularly for Judy's mother, Tammy.
Right. She felt like the investigation was dragging its feet, that they weren't doing enough.
Absolutely. She was very vocal about her criticisms of the Randolph County Sheriff's Office, which was led by Sheriff Richard Hurley at the time.
And what was her main criticism?
Well, she believed that a quicker response, particularly the use of police dogs in those early hours after Judy was reported missing, could have made a huge difference.
How so?
Well, dogs, you know, their sense of smell is incredible. They could have potentially picked up Judy's scent, maybe tracked her movements, maybe even found evidence that was later lost or contaminated because time had passed. It's one of those what ifs that, as a parent, you just can't help but think about.
Right. And, you know, you have to think about the impact of that 2-day delay in reporting Judy missing. If she had been reported missing right away, maybe the dogs would have been brought in sooner.
It's a very valid point, and it highlights, you know, this tension that can sometimes exist between law enforcement and the families of victims. You have Tammy, who's desperate for answers, who believes that her daughter's case isn't being taken seriously enough, and you have the sheriff's office, who's following their protocols, but maybe not communicating as effectively as they could have.
And Sheriff Hurley, He had his own perspective on the situation, right?
He did. He pointed to that 2-day delay in reporting Judy missing. And he also mentioned that initially there were some suggestions from the family, however brief, that Judy might have run away. And even though she didn't have a history of running away, that initial suggestion, that initial classification of her as a runaway, it can really shape the trajectory of an investigation.
Right. Because if you're thinking runaway, you're not necessarily thinking homicide.
Exactly. And that can lead to a delay in bringing in certain resources, like those police dogs that Tammy felt were so crucial.
It's a difficult situation all around. And, you know, you can understand the frustration on both sides.
Absolutely.
So Tammy, understandably, she's not satisfied with the way things are going. She ends up hiring a private detective to kind of take a fresh look at the case.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, she even supports Hurley's opponent in the 2002 sheriff's election.
It speaks to her determination to get justice for her daughter. She's not giving up. She's trying everything she can to push the investigation forward.
Right. She's advocating for her daughter in every way that she can.
Exactly. Now, the investigation did continue. You know, the sheriff's office did continue to work on the case. They interviewed witnesses. They submitted evidence for DNA analysis to the State Bureau of Investigation.
So they weren't just sitting on their hands.
No, but things were moving slowly, you know. The wait for DNA results can take a long time, and in this case, it seems like those results didn't provide the breakthrough they were hoping for. And as time went on, the leads that they were pursuing kind of dried up.
And I imagine that the rural setting didn't help matters either.
No, it can actually make things more difficult.
In what way?
Well, in a small community, everyone knows everyone, and people might be reluctant to come forward with information, maybe out of fear of retribution, maybe out of loyalty to someone who might be involved.
Right, it's not like a big city where people can kind of blend in and disappear.
Exactly. And then you have the problem of rumors, you know, unsubstantiated rumors that can spread like wildfire in a small town. And those rumors can actually hinder the investigation because they can distract from the real facts.
They create a lot of noise that investigators then have to sift through.
Exactly.
So years pass, we're now into the 2010s, and it seems like Judy's case is going to remain cold.
And then in 2018, there's a big development. Randolph County Crime Stoppers, they increase the reward being offered for information in Judy's case.
By how much?
It jumps to $20,000, and that includes matching funds from the governor's office and a pledge from some family friends.
So that's a significant amount of money. It's clearly an attempt to incentivize anyone who might know something to come forward.
It is. And sometimes, you know, time can be a factor. Maybe someone who was afraid to speak up years ago is now in a different place in their life.
Right. Maybe they're not as scared anymore.
Maybe they feel a sense of guilt, a sense of, you know, wanting to do the right thing. A reward like that can be a powerful motivator.
So the reward money's out there. And then in 2019, the case gets a huge boost in exposure.
Right. Private investigator Derek Levasseur and his investigation discovery show Breaking Homicide, they decide to feature Judy's case.
And that brings national attention to the story.
It does.
And Levasseur, he's not just some TV personality, right? He's a seasoned investigator.
He's the real deal. He was a detective for many years, and he's known for his work on cold cases. He and his team, they have a lot of experience in digging up new leads, in re-examining old evidence, in talking to people who maybe haven't been spoken to before.
So he's brought in by the sheriff's office.
He is. Sheriff Gregory J. Siebold, he actually invites Levasseur to come in and take a look at the case.
So they're open to this outside perspective.
They are, which I think is a positive sign.
Yeah.
It shows that they're not, you know, closing themselves off to new ideas, to new ways of looking at the evidence.
And what does Levasseur find?
Well, in his June 2019 episode, he actually uncovers something pretty significant. A police interview from 2001 that the original detective on the case wasn't even aware of.
Whoa. That's a big oversight.
It is.
It makes you wonder what else might have been missed.
Right. It raises questions about, you know, the communication within the sheriff's office, the record keeping. But it also shows that even after all these years, there can still be new information to uncover.
And Levasseur, he doesn't stop there, right?
No, he and his team, they track down witnesses who hadn't been interviewed before. Or maybe they were interviewed, but now, years later, they're willing to share more information than they were originally.
Okay, so that's promising.
It is. And Levasseur, he shares all of his findings with Captain Chris Maness, who's now the lead investigator on the case.
So it seems like Levasseur's involvement really did breathe new life into the investigation.
It seems that way. He himself said that he felt like he pushed the investigation forward 100%. And as a direct result of his work, some of the items from the 2001 investigation, they're resubmitted for advanced DNA testing.
Oh, so they're taking advantage of the new technologies that weren't available 20 years ago.
Exactly.
That's got to be, you know, a source of hope for Judy's family.
It is. But it's important to remember that DNA testing, it can take time. It's not like on TV where you get the results in an hour.
Right.
Captain Maness, he was cautious about, you know, setting any expectations about how long it would take to get those results back. But the fact that they're being tested is a positive step. And one of the things that both Levasseur and Maness seem to agree on is that there are people out there who know what happened to Judy.
Oh, that's a chilling thought.
It is. And they believe that those people are still in Randolph County.
So the answers are out there somewhere in that community.
That's what they believe. And Tammy Schmidt, Judy's mother, she's never given up hope. She's expressed her gratitude for Levasseur's efforts, and she continues to fight for justice for her daughter.
It's a testament to her strength and her love for her daughter.
It is. And the community, they haven't forgotten Judy either.
No, of course not.
That field off Groom Road where her body was found, it's a constant reminder of this unsolved crime, of the loss that they've experienced. It's a place that's forever marked by this tragedy.
And as we stand here today, March 15th, 2025, Judy's case is still on the Randolph County Sheriff's Office cold cases list.
Right. No arrests, no suspects named beyond that initial focus on Tony Ray Sierra Jr. But the investigation is still open. The $20,000 reward is still out there. And the phone numbers for Crime Stoppers and for the Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigations Division, we'll make sure to include those in the show notes.
So if anyone out there knows anything, no matter how small it might seem, now is the time to come forward.
It could be the missing piece of the puzzle. It could be what finally brings Judy's family some peace.
And while we wait for those DNA results, we can only hope that someone out there will find the courage to speak up. Because as we've seen with this case, sometimes all it takes is one person, one piece of information to change everything.
It's a case that really makes you think about the power of time. On the one hand, time can make things more difficult. Memories fade, evidence degrades, witnesses disappear.
Right.
But on the other hand, time can also bring new opportunities.
In what way?
Well, as technology advances, we have new ways to analyze old evidence. Maybe those DNA tests will reveal something that wasn't detectable 20 years ago. And as time passes, people change. Someone who was once too afraid to speak up might now feel differently.
That's true. Maybe they've had a change of heart. Maybe they're not as worried about the consequences anymore.
Right. So even though this case has been cold for a long time, it doesn't mean that it's hopeless.
It's a reminder that justice, even though it can be delayed, is still worth fighting for.
Absolutely. In Judy's story, it's a reminder that these unsolved crimes, they're not just statistics. They're not just stories in the news. They represent real people, real families, real communities that have been deeply affected by loss and by the lack of answers.
And that lack of answers, that's what makes these cases so haunting. We're left with so many questions. Did Judy leave willingly that night? Was Tony Ray Sierra Jr. telling the whole truth? What was the meaning of that nylon strap?
Right. And why has this seemingly peaceful rural community held on to this secret for so long? These are the questions that continue to fascinate us, that keep us coming back to these cases, that keep us searching for the truth. And if you're as intrigued by these unsolved mysteries as we are, we encourage you to visit our website, nextchapternews.com, where we delve into many more cases like this one. Cases that remind us that every life has a story and that sometimes those stories are left unfinished.
So until next time, keep those lights on and stay curious.
And if you have any information about the disappearance and murder of Judy Carol Rawlings, please contact the Randolph County Sheriff's Office. You might just hold the key to finally solving this mystery and bringing peace to a community that has waited far too long for answers.
Thanks for joining us.